If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Today on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel.
Has there ever been a better casting than Ben the Bane Davis at these Misfits
events? Oh my God.
So good. The mic integrity also is unbelievable.
Not just the mic.
Please welcome Ben Davis.
Hola, ¿cómo estás? That's about all I know.
This demolition machine came from Bosnia, son! Robin Black, you ever been to Bosnia?
I find you fascinating. We know that you're obviously very good at commentating, but you've also gotten in the ring yourself. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you would do that.
You wouldn't think that I'm the guy that's done bare-knuckle boxing or fought Anderson Silva's son, right? Surprise is a fun factor of it, but...
How the hell did you get into reality TV from there?
Rachel, I've not seen much reality TV, so when I'm talking with this producer, I was just like, oh, the challenge seems like an interesting one. And then in December, they were like, we've cast you. And I was like... Well,
did you love doing it? Did you hate it? I mean, what was that like for you?
I underestimated how challenging the house would be and this like nonstop 24/7 social cycle of being around 31 people that you don't know.
Will you ever do reality TV again?
I think that...
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm Rachel Yucatel, and today we are diving into a story that's all about risk, reinvention, and what it means to step into the ring, literally and figuratively. You probably know my guest today from MTV's The Challenge, Vets and New Threats, where he made his reality TV debut on season 41 recently. At just 25 years old, Ben the Bane Davis has already carved out a name for himself in combat sports, calling fights for UFC, Fight Pass, and some of the biggest promotions in the game. But when he stepped into the world of reality competition, he wasn't just a commentator anymore, he was the story. On The Challenge, the stakes are different. It's not just about skill or analysis, it's about alliances, pressure, performance, and how you handle being under the lens 24/7. For Ben, this was a new arena, one where personality and authenticity are on display just as much as athletic ability. Today, we're going to talk to him about what it means to go from being the voice behind the action to the one living it, how he's managed the scrutiny of reality TV, and what it takes to stay grounded when everyone has an opinion on who you are. This is about more than just competition. It's about identity, reinvention, and what happens when the commentator becomes the competitor. Please enjoy my conversation with Ben the Bane Davis.
I'm
Ben the Bane Davis, welcome to Misunderstood. How are you today?
Oh, Rachel, I'm fantastic. I must compliment the flora behind you. Some fantastic choices. I don't know if my plant terminology fails me, but it's a beautiful display you have.
Thank you so much. Well, I moved to Palm Beach, Florida, and I felt like I should have something that was very, you know, Palm Beach behind me. So it has nothing to do with the show. I just thought it was cool. So thank you. So since I've been researching you, the biggest question I have is, where did you get the name The Bane?
It was probably the most uninteresting thing I would say about me. I was doing some Twitch streaming, bit of live streaming a couple of years back. And for me, it just felt important to have more of a brand, right, than just Ben Davis. I thought, what would capture someone's attention if they're scrolling by? They go, David's live streaming. Ben Davis is live streaming. Johnny's live streaming. I don't care about that. But The Bane is live streaming. Well, who's The Bane? What does that mean? You know, so it just felt like a little bit more of a dynamic edge to draw people in, which failed miserably.
but is that a word that meant something to you, Bane? Like, where do you even, like,
I would say in terms of specific inspiration, I was a huge Batman fan growing up. I had this like 3-foot by 6-foot Batman poster hanging over my bed at one point. And so, you know, Bane is as a character, right? The one of the most strongest people in the DC universe. I was like, yeah, that's a cool, you know, why not take some emulation from that character?
Got it. All right. Well, then that makes sense. I like it. All right. I find you fascinating, as I was mentioning before we started. I've seen that at such an early age, you have done so much. I feel like that is a very rare quality in this day and age, especially for kids your age. And I really respect it. I respect the hustle. What I think is interesting about you, you attended Arizona State University. You graduated with honors in finance, but you didn't take that path. Did you start on that path or right after college, you were like, I don't want to do this?
You know, during my undergrad at the Harvard of the West Coast, ASU, I was really business oriented. Yeah, true. It was something that I felt was secure. That was the biggest thing why I was in a business mindset, is because growing up doing theater and drumming and being on an improv troupe just didn't feel like something that could pay the bills. I didn't understand how to really monetize those interests of mine and what any income stream could look like. So, you know, 18-year-old me was like, well, the conventional normal thing, right? The mold of usual people my age is just go down something like marketing, finance, accounting. And I just figured I could be happy with that. I figured I could find a way to love it and be passionate. And so I did like a year and a half of commercial real estate internship. I interned at Amazon as a manager. And all throughout.
What is that? By the way, what does that mean? I've always wondered what it's like to work at Amazon.
It sucks. It really, in short, it's a bad time. I can understand why some people do it, right? The hours are quite, you know, you get a lot of hours, you get a lot of work, and I'm sure there's great benefits. But it just, man, it was soul sucking being in a warehouse every day and, you know, feeling kind of purposeless because there was supposed to be like an intern program, right? Uh-huh. But there wasn't one. I was just working as a manager. I was like, what the hell is this? They've hoodwinked me, Rachel. I'm just an employee now. I'm not really an intern. And so that was also a bit dissatisfying because I was expecting something structured, learning-based. And then in reality, it's just like, okay, I'm clocking in, managing 3 dozen people and having no clue what the hell I'm doing.
Right. And was it like, is simple as like people are making orders and you guys are finding shit off the shelves and throwing it on the truck? Like, I've never understood how that works.
It is complex in the sense that you have kind of like the inbound half of the fulfillment center, and then you have the outbound half of the fulfillment center, which is where I was stationed at. The inbound is like really where you're doing a lot of the labeling, the orders are coming in and being packaged, and then outbound is where we're kind of processing and putting it on the trucks. And like, it really is like this crazy combination. Every gear is turning. But the outbound docks was so important because if we got backed up, then the whole fulfillment center would shut down. And there's this concept called like blue lighting. It's like, okay, if you've got X amount that's not being pushed, then we're blue lighting and that's terrible. We're in red zone. It's critical territory. And Rachel, I was blue lighting every day. Like, it was a daily thing where I would push us to the brink of, you know, total collapse. And I remember like the L6s and L7s, they'd come down from the upper floor, right? They're thrones up in the pantheon of Amazon warehouse. And they'd be like, Ben, what are you doing? You're shutting the factory down. And I'm like,
I don't know.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Can you imagine if Amazon like was shut down because of little you? That would have been amazing.
You know what? Honestly, I should have done it one day just for the story. I should have shut it down and been like, this is my last day. I should have shut down the factory.
Right. That's hysterical. All right. So what was your like job after that? How did you get into esports commentary? Is that, by the way, is that when you're like calling for games? Like, are you actually being like, this person's making this play and look at this guy on Roblox? Like, how does that work?
That is a very accurate, I would say, depiction. It's a video game. You're commentating on it as if it's real life. And it's sometimes hard to take serious, right? Because you're sitting there and in your pajamas trying to act as if you're, you know, on a live broadcast.
And you're telling your parents you're making money and this is a real job, right?
Oh, I was transparent with my parents. I was like, I'm making shit from this. In fact, at time, I feel like I'm paying to be here and do this. No, like it really spawned out of, you know, efficiency, right? The barrier of entry to get into esports commentary, especially in the mixed martial arts space, was like on the floor, if not beneath it. So for me, I was like, it's impossible to kind of break into any of these doors at the moment when I was a junior at ASU. And the esports community was like, yeah, we've got 12 people watching our events. Why not let you commentate, right? There was really no backlash, no issue or resistance. And so I was like, sure, I'll make this happen. I was doing shows Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then trying to shop that reel all around the country to regional shows, which was challenging, right? You know, it's difficult to be like, hey, I'm commentating a video game. Please let me do the real thing.
Right. Well, what's interesting about that, and please do not take this the wrong way, but I'm a mother. Right. I have a 13-year-old who loves to like bed rot and go sit in a room and like play Roblox with her friends all day. And I'm always like, you're going to end up being like an Uber driver. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but I really wish that that is not what she will be for a living. So, but what's interesting is that you're telling me this isn't for a bunch of losers. Like you can actually parlay that into a job, which is what you did. And you used that as experience to get you into a world that you are more interested in. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's, I think, all about intentionality. I never had the intention to just do esports. I viewed it as like the easiest first step in hopefully a very long journey. And you know, that didn't come without struggle. It was probably a year and a half of doing the esports broadcasting concurrently with like the media reporting and on-site coverage and the content creation and building that brand. Like it was something that I was toiling away at, but I really didn't see a return for quite some time in the sense of an actual promotion giving me an opportunity. But yeah, I think that if you're isolating your time and focus on something without really the game plan to take something further or have just a, you know, a couple step process, then it is a bit of a waste and you're probably not going to get anything out of it.
And were you interested in the future, like a bucket list? You wanted to be a commentator for Major League Baseball, for football. Like, are any of those things on your radar? Or you were like, I want to be in UFC, MMA, all this kind of version. Like, what were your thoughts?
I would say for the first two and a half years, it really was specifically combat sports. I have such a passion for mixed martial arts and boxing now. And calling those fights is absolutely a huge box I'd love to check. Lead play-by-play for the UFC, that's a dream job. But I think as this journey's continued, I've kind of grasped the reality that in order to probably make X happen, I got to do Y and expand outside of combat sports. And so, you know, in the beginning, for sure, I was like, combat sports is everything. And now my head's kind of at, well, it's one thing, you know, on the plate.
So you've said that you try to bring something different to commentary. Can you tell us about what your signature style is and how do you want to change the way fans experience combat sports?
I think that there's so many play-by-plays operating at the moment that are tremendous, right? John Anik's the gold standard over at the UFC, and he has a deeply economical approach, no words wasted over an eight-hour period, which is awesome. And the stats he brings, the preparation he provides is so educational. For me, I can't help but be myself, right, in the booth, and that's a very passion-first mentality where it's a lot of high energy. It's a lot of trying to, you know, excite the audience as excited as I am, you know? And I don't know. One of my main goals was always if a fighter watches a fight back that I've commentated on, I never want them to hit that mute button,
I never want them to be like, you know, man, this, you know, I gave my best in that fight, but the commentating team didn't give me a fair shake, or, you know, just we're going on tangents the entirety of the fight. Like, I, as someone who's fought, listened back and hated the commentary, I'm like, well, I, you know, do unto others what you want done to you. Right.
Right. And how hard is it? Like, I'm assuming you have to know the sport really, really well to be able to make those play by plays as it's going on.
I think that for my role in the booth, having knowledge is deeply important, only in the sense to ask better questions to my color commentators. You know, they're the experts. They're the former active fighters, my analysts. And I have the beauty of like really not having to know too much, right? Like, I'm just setting them up, cueing them throughout the evening. I could feasibly walk into something, have no knowledge of the sport, but if I have the, you know, correct play-by-play mentality, get away with it almost. Is that the best? No, right? Being absolutely educated and having experience, I would say is best, but for my role, not entirely required.
Right. Okay. What is the most unforgettable fight you've ever called? Like one still that like gives you chills.
There is a fight I always reference where it was in Long Island, New York, Patchogue specifically, which if you're going to Long Island, don't know why you would be, I would say avoid Patchogue. but we're at this place called the Stereo Garden, and a fighter named Kamal Dunkley, he goes by Dynamite, is making the walk. And we spoke with him the day prior, and there was just a different energy. You know, some fighters have a mentality that, you know, rubs you a different way. You're like, this isn't the average person I'm dealing with. There's something deeper going on here. And he's dressed in this one piece outfit. And, you know, there was a confidence about him that wasn't really like anyone else on the card. And he told me, he's like, I'm going to end this guy with the first punch I throw. And whenever someone says something like that, you know, make a note of it, but 99 times out of 100, that's not what plays out. This night though, he was correct. Went out there, knocked a dude out in 5 seconds, and it was ridiculous. And I've listened to the callback many times, and everything about it just fits perfectly like a puzzle piece. I loved how me and the commentators queued it up. I loved how, you know, that punch unfolded. I hate going back and watching clips too frequently, but that is one where I'm like, man, I'm kind of happy with how that turned out.
Right. What if I told you that the idea that you only get parasites when you travel to some exotic country is flat wrong? Millions of Americans carry parasites right now, often without symptoms. For example, it's estimated that millions in the United States have been exposed to Toxocara, a parasitic worm, yet most never even know it. Parasites do not need a plane ticket. They can enter through tap water, sushi, undercooked foods, or contaminated produce. Some strains live in all stages, eggs, larvae, adults, hidden in your gut, releasing toxins that sabotage your energy and digestion. That's why I'm excited about Parify, Kim Rogers' 30-day full-spectrum parasite cleanse. The kit works by clearing parasites, worms, candida, and heavy metals, targeting parasites in all life stages, supporting gut health, detox pathways, and toxin removal. It's taken orally, daily, for 30 days. With precise dosing. I'm actually doing it myself right now. I started with the lymph cleanse, then I'm doing the Parify. Want to dive deep? I did a full interview with Kim Rogers, the worm queen herself, where we expose all the myths, understand the facts, and show how to protect your body. Listen to that episode if you haven't already. Meanwhile, go to rogershood.com and use the code Rachel to get 10% off of your order. That's R-A-C-H-E-L for 10% off. Give it a try. Maybe your body's missing link is hiding inside. Let's do this together. Again, it's rogershood.com, rogershood.com, and use the code Rachel for 10% off. Okay, so now we know that you're obviously very good at commentating, but you've also gotten in the ring yourself, which I don't know why you would do that. I mean, listen, you're a good-looking kid. You got a lot to say. Like, what makes you want to get in the ring yourself?
Well, almost because it's so against what you'd expect, right? Like, why? You wouldn't think that I'm the guy that's done bare-knuckle boxing or fought Anderson Silva's son, right? So that, I don't know, surprise is a fun factor of it. But I do think there's an element where having skin in the game and walking it as much as I talk it is important. You know, I'm not someone that's ever been athletically gifted. I've never been someone that's attached to sports. But in this fight game, there are so many people that love to chirp and chat and don't really ever back it up. And I'm a fun guy, right? I love, you know, being personable and whatnot. But like, I do have that dog in me. And getting the chance to display it on several occasions has been tremendously satisfying, even if most of them don't go my way.
Right. So do you go into it thinking, okay, I'm going to win this. I can win this. Or are you like, this is just for fun?
I've always believed I could win every fight that I've had, even when the odds are like stupidly stacked against me. I'm like, yeah, I could probably pull this off. Right, guys. But I think the one thing for me that's maybe different from other fight, and I would never call myself a fighter, but with my fights is like, I want to entertain. It's the showmanship bone in the body where I'm like, okay, they want a show. I'm going to deliver a show with whatever happens. And that's like almost why I prioritize the buildup more so than the fight itself. Is the content online fun? Is the press conference, the weigh-ins? Am I making moments that make people go, oh, you know, I am interested in seeing this fight, or this is a bit intriguing. Like that's as important to me as the fight itself.
What is the training that goes into something like that? Like, by the way, I went to a bare knuckle fight.
Yeah.
I sat in the front row. I was a guest of one of the owner, and I went with Bam Margera. Do you know him from?
Of Jackass. Jackass.
Yeah. Him and his wife, his new wife, Danny. First of all, Danny and I were, they give you those little things to hold on to if you need to squeeze something. Do you know, do they have this everywhere? So they get, I was like pretending I was in Rocky. I'm like, Adrian, call the fight. I was like, this is insane. It was blood everywhere. It was like, how do you practice, you know, not practice. How do you get yourself prepared to know that this is some serious shit you're about to do?
The preparation for the bare knuckle boxing experience was, well, twice a day, I would just go slam my forehead against the concrete wall. And that was it, really. No, there was, you know, two times a day we do our strength and conditioning and boxing, a lot of hard sparring. I think for the bare knuckle boxing one, it was like, okay, let's get into some deep waters with people in the gym and, you know, and just see how we react, see what we can sharpen. And, you know, we had a game plan, which was stay long, stay on the outside and jab them for the first round or two, and then open up with some like really just two punch combinations, nothing really extended. So there was a lot of intentionality in the fight camp to make those strikes as possible and as probable for me at all times, right? How can I position my opponent to where I'm able to enact my game plan? If you've seen the BKFC fight that I was in, all of that went out the window like in the first 2 seconds. So nothing went right in that fight. And, you know, it is what it is.
That's really funny. All right. But did you have any regrets? Was there something that you learned about yourself doing it?
I reaffirmed that in the face of like extreme adversity where you're getting knocked down, I'll get back up every time. And if you watched that fight, was I unconscious? No, I wanted to keep fighting. But, you know, the referee decided otherwise, which is very fair. But yeah, I think for me, it was about displaying the durability and toughness and, you know, a kind of scrawny kid from Phoenix that grew up doing theater could have the gumption about him to continue fighting and stay tough.
Right. Exactly. All right. So now how the hell did you get into reality TV from there?
A very funny story. So the longish version of it was I did a show in Phuket last year, called Fight Circus, which is this like variety style combat sports show, in Thailand. And one of the guys that they brought in has done a lot of work in reality TV over the last couple decades. And we hit it off. Very, very nice guy. And we're debriefing after the show a week later, and this is probably March, I would say, of 2024. And we just get on the topic of his career. And I was just asking him questions. And one of the things that had come up was like what reality shows we would want to be on. And he was like asking me, well, which one do you think you want to go on? And I really, Rachel, I've not seen much reality TV. Like I watched The Biggest Loser growing up.
Me too. And I love that.
Love that show. But I was like, I don't think I'm fit for that one. and the only other reality TV show I'd seen was season 24 of The Challenge, which was like in 2023. I'd randomly watched it at the, you know, suggestion of a friend. And so when I'm talking with this producer, I was just like, oh, the Challenge seems like an interesting one. And he was like, well, that's crazy you say that. You know, I worked with the casting director for a bit of time. Let me just shoot her a text and see where she's at in her casting process. And I was like, sure, thanks, man, I guess. And then completely forgot about that conversation. Months and months went by. In July, I got a DM from her, and we had a conversation, submitted all the reels, did all the medical, physical, mental testing, and was thinking the whole time, like, okay, yeah, they're not going to cast me. Like, that'd be a weird decision. And then in December, they were like, we've cast you. And I was like, fuck. Well, well, now we're in it. Now I've done it.
Right. So was this exciting? Were you like, oh shit, now I've got to prepare for something else completely different?
It was an element of both. There was absolutely excitement in that it's so unique of an opportunity. And I was just not in a million years did I think, okay, this is something that I would get involved with. And then there was the realization that, okay, well, now I have to prepare. And this is, you know, at this point, right, the show is fucking, you know, CrossFit and Marines, and I'm just like NFL athletes. I'm just like, what the hell are we doing here? Yeah. So, you know, my girlfriend, she's been doing CrossFit for about 8 years. So I started doing it with her. But the thing about CrossFit is like, unless you're doing it for a extended period of time, right? Longer term, you don't really see the results or the benefits. So right. I spent like maybe 10 weeks just killing my body and I was so sore. And then February rolls around and they're like, all right, it's time to go. And I was like, well, I don't feel that prepared.
Right. And your body didn't look any different. You hadn't put on all this muscle or anything.
No. Yeah. I was like, what the hell did I do all that for? You know, I don't know. Rachel, I think it's genetics. I don't think I've got the DNA in me to show muscle like that. You know, it's just not part of my body.
Okay. Well, you can keep that like thin European look. People really like that.
Vampire look, the Romanian, you know, underbelly type look.
Sure. So did you love doing it? Did you hate it? I mean, what was that like for you?
The first week and a half was really difficult. I think I underestimated how challenging the house would be and this like nonstop 24/7 social cycle of being around 31 people that you don't know. And everyone's task is to get the other person out. So like this layer of just unsettling deception and lack of faith in every conversation I was having, it did get to me in the early frames of the game. And I feel so terrible for Nani, who was my partner in the beginning. And she was somebody I thought I was going to be attached to for at least like the first half of the season, maybe even the full season. We didn't know that we'd be switching every week, right? And I was pouring everything into Nani. And I think I was stressing her out more so than anything else. Cause I'd be like, Nani, they were just talking over by the dinner table. And I heard Justin's name flying around, or, oh, but someone said something about Gabe. We should keep that in mind. Overdoing it. I was over processing. And it took me like, yeah, a week and a half to chill out. But once I got chill, I was like, this is great. You know?
Yeah. So I've been on a reality show before. I know how that is when you have cameras everywhere, you're mic'd all the time, except for in the bathroom or whatever. And It becomes, you know, people don't realize, they're like, oh, that must be really intrusive. I remember when I left, I was on Celebrity Rehab. So it was like 3 weeks and whatever. When I left, I almost felt lonely. I'm like, no one's going to follow me to go read my book outside and do nothing. So, you know, I loved it. It felt really comfortable and I never even noticed them around after the first day. Did you end up getting comfortable with that? Like the reason why I'm setting you up for this question is because you've had a voice that mattered already, right? Cause you've been in there, you've been doing journalism and the commentating, but now you're a reality star and you've come to see, I'm sure, that people put a lot of weight in that. They think they know you, they listen to what you say. So like, did you mind that all of a sudden you had this media in your face, the cameras in your face, that everything you said was on air?
I don't know if I minded it necessarily. You know, I am definitely used to that setting of cameras, microphones. And so it wasn't too unfamiliar, but it definitely was a little bit of an adjustment in just the content of these conversations, right? Yeah. Speaking with like Kara about my sexuality, and just having a whole photo, video shoot there was a little bit of an adjustment, but you know, something that I embraced and cherished. I think that the opportunity to, deliver words that could be impactful to not only the people in the house, but, anybody watching, right. And either providing just any level of encouragement, I thought was, that was a weight and a cross that I was more than happy to bear. Right. Because sometimes you need to hear something, whether it be from the TV, whether it be from the radio, Spotify musicians. Like, I think that in today's society, messaging is deeply important. And so having the responsibility to do that on this season was nice, even if, you know, there wasn't really much of me on the show.
I'm curious if anything happened, there was like a sense of betrayal that still sits with you today, even though now it's over. Like, was there something very personal that you were like, that fucking sucked?
You know, I think that nothing, you know, because I was able to dissect the game versus what was real life. You know, okay. Some people making game specific decisions and how that really, that's not something that they're coming at me personally about. Like Sydney, for instance, big betrayal. Right. Off camera told me you're my number two. We're going to the final. And I was like, sure, that sounds good. And then 3 days later, voting me into the arena. That was something where I was like, ouch, kind of hurts my feelings, you know. Yeah. But it's hard to get me to take things personal. You know, I think that, especially in combat sports, there's just been a tsunami of either homophobic messages, crazy DMs, you know, people disliking me. I'm like, I could give less of a shit about that. So if you want me to take something personal, then it has to really be impactful, not, you know, making a game decision on a reality TV show.
Got it. Okay. I like it. I respect that. All right. But would you consider yourself misunderstood by any means, or you feel like you're fully grounded in who you are and what you are and how people see you?
I feel pretty grounded. I feel incredibly myself. I don't think that there's any layer of facade to me. I try and be transparent. I try and be open. And I think that, I don't know, if people have problems with me, it's more of a product of they don't know me and they're twisting in their own minds, right? So, and then again, like I said, that isn't shit I can be accountable for. If you are interpreting something in the stupidest way possible, how on earth is that my problem? You know, so I feel I'm me. If you don't like it, you know, is what it is.
Okay. Love it. All right. You've carved a lane that blends intellect, media, fighting, all these different things that you've done, finance, all these things that you've done. For people that are listening, that are young or old, doesn't matter. Can you give a little bit of insight or tips on like really going after it and becoming who you want? Because I think you've done it really well.
I think the biggest tip or suggestion I could offer is that if you don't have a truly relentless pursuit for what you want to do, then don't expect that full result. You know, I think that in today's society, people think that if they just half-ass it, or, you know, if they imagine and fantasize about a goal, then it'll just magically come true. And that's like the most opposite of the truth, right? Yeah. You know, if you have a job you want, or a career that you want, or a life you aspire to live, then break it down into reasonable steps and take those steps. And I think that in our world, like, unfortunately, it's not really a meritocracy. It's not really who's most qualified or not. I mean, shit, you can just look around in this country and see, yeah, that dumbass doesn't deserve that spot, right? But it really does speak to the networking aspect of things. It's a lot about who you know, not what you know. Your network is your net worth. So find creative ways to build bridges, have people fighting for you, because it's what it comes down to. If you don't have the right people fighting for you in the right conversations at the right times, you're not going to get the right results.
I totally agree. What do you have a failure you could tell us about that you're grateful for? Something that didn't work out but shaped you anyway?
I think that I could say that multiple times of like my social media accounts getting suspended, having to start from zero was deeply frustrating. But that's, I would say, more trivial of a challenge to get through, right? That's, not too big of a dealio. But there were multiple jobs I was fired from, you know, multiple commentating gigs I was let go from. on UFC Fight Pass, on, you know, the regional scene, media gigs, right? Content creation for certain companies where they're like, yeah, we're, you know, we're just not interested in pursuing that for our company anymore. And a lot of instances where I could have stopped and pivoted and given up and and chose not to. I'll give you a short story on one specific example. I was doing reporting on this organization called Fight Club, which is partially owned by Michael Bisping, who's a huge combat sports figure. And I was like, just so elated to have the gig, right? Be a media correspondent for a pretty well-known outlet. That's great. And I'm on the road interviewing athletes, providing coverage, bringing stories back. And the day before the fights, after like 2 weeks of covering these organizations, the day before the fights, I get a call from my boss and he's like, yeah, man, we got to let you go. You know, the investors and management just don't think you're a good look for the brand. And so, we're gonna have to part ways with you. And I was like in the bathroom at the sports bar, listening to this and just deeply crushed. I was like, man, I've kind of busted my ass for you guys the last 2 weeks and given every second of trying to create the best that I could. And just to get thrown away like a piece of trash wasn't exactly that, you know, didn't feel that great.
Why wouldn't you have been a good look? What did they mean by that?
Honestly, I still don't know. I really don't know. I think that it was a couple other people on the team that were, unfairly messaging my bosses because they wanted someone else to get the media correspondent gig. And it's all speculation. And I've never cared enough to really try and find the root of it. But it was confusing, frustrating. And at the end of the day, I was like, man, I thought I was going to be with these guys for a long time, and little did I know it was going to be 14 days. Yeah. So I think that, yeah, it's a product of like, you're going to have failures. You're going to have setbacks. You're going to have things that don't go your way, but it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? Yeah. And greener pastures will come.
Totally. All right. Last couple questions. Your thoughts on the White House fight scheduled for next year?
Yeah, I think that it's stupid. I think it's kind of a waste of a lot of people's times. It's like, why? Because I know taxpayers are paying for it, right? So I'm like, that's not something that I really want to be contributing to. It's a very interesting concept and a spectacle, but it's just... It's not something that's going to come to people's expectations, right? Whenever the UFC has done these huge events, these huge cards, it really falls a bit short of expectations, right? You can think of UFC Noche. You can think about UFC 300, the Sphere show. Like, in concept and in the marketing and lead up and all this, it's the greatest thing ever. And then you've got kind of a lackluster fight card and, just a reality that's not what the vision is. So I saw those graphics that were created and this is what it might look like. It's going to look far from that. So we'll see if it happens. I'm kind of doubtful that it will. But at the end of the day, it's hard for me to care.
Got it. Okay. Will you ever do reality TV again?
Absolutely. 100%. I think that my first season of The Challenge wasn't really a great reflection of like what I can bring, whether that be from a competitive standpoint, whether that could be from a dramatic standpoint. I do hope that there's a little bit more in the tank on, that avenue. And listen, I have been training. I've been doing my rock climbing. I have been back in the CrossFit gym. So we are in better shape than we were for 41.
Is there a show that like is on your bucket list?
I would love to do some cooking related one. Like Worst Chefs in America would be interesting.
Wow. Okay.
Right. I don't have to get my body punished twice a week doing something like that. Right.
Right. Oh, I thought you were going to say like Special Forces or whatever that show is.
Oh, what? Me on a Special Forces? No, thank you.
Like jumping out backwards out of a helicopter where your head, you have a helmet over your face or a bag. I mean, that would scare the shit out of me.
Rachel, I'd much rather try and create a souffle, than drive a tank.
Totally. But maybe Traders, that could be a good one.
Maybe Traders, I've been tuning into Big Brother and Survivor the last couple of years. So, either of those would be a lot of fun. Survivor would be good in the sense that like I need to lose a little bit of weight and it seems like everybody slims down on that show for some reason or another, right?
Would you ever do Naked and Afraid?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
They came to me like 4 years ago and asked me to do like a celebrity version of Naked and Afraid. And I was like,
yeah.
No, what are you paying me like $2 million? I'm like, right. We're getting that. And I get to lose 22 pounds while I'm there. Then I'll do it. But no, that is not something I want to do.
It's generational wealth or I'm not doing it.
Right. Exactly. And then I'm always cold, but to think of myself on some island naked, freezing in the rain with snakes and like using a pick to like get my food. Forget about it. It sounds terrible.
No. Yeah. And like, I'm, you know, I think I could sharpen some survival instincts, but I just wouldn't bet on myself if I was naked in the wilderness. I feel like that's, I don't know. How long do they make you do? It's like a month out there, right?
It's I think it's 21 days.
3 weeks with no clothes? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I don't know. Not for me.
Yeah, not for me either. Okay. Last question. Speaking of bucket list from before, we are so young. What is on the horizon for you? What are some things maybe totally different than this, or if you want to do this forever, but what do you want to do later?
It's difficult because like I have so many boxes I want to check and a lot of random broadcasting goals, whether that be UFC League play-by-play, whether that be, you know, a big part of the Olympics on-air crew for their summer and winter Olympics.
Oh, cool.
I would love to be a voice of one of the Phoenix-based sports teams. If it's the D-backs, the Suns, you know, Cardinals, I think like that would be a really, that's someone that's born and raised in Phoenix, having the opportunity to do play-by-play for one of these major organizations would be really fulfilling. I think, yeah, in reality TV, I'd love to continue that and keep banging the drum. I mean, shit, Johnny's been doing it for 19 years. So
I was just going to say, he's made a total career of it and it's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it works for some people, not all.
Exactly. So if Johnny can do it, I think I can maybe do a little bit of it.
He's very well spoken, but I have to say, even though I like him, you're much better spoken than him. So I think you can get far. Would you ever do commentating for like Savannah Bananas? Do you watch them?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I love them.
Yellow Tux, Jesse and the whole gang. Yeah. I think they're tremendous. Yeah. Like they, I don't know. I have loved watching their evolution in the last couple of years from this small town, Savannah, Georgia, rinky dink stadium to like 90,000 fans at Clemson University. Okay. I don't know. I feel like in these days, we don't see really truly inspirational sports stories like that anymore.
Yeah.
So man, like if getting involved in some way with them would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Last question. I know you said you have a girlfriend. I saw you posted about her recently for a year or something like that. Do you want to have kids? Do you want to get married ever?
Yeah, marriage. Absolutely. You know, that's on the docket. We've gone ring shopping. So, it's becoming more real. but I don't,
so you're not going to go on Love is Blind anytime soon.
No,
okay,
I don't. I mean, you know, I think I found the one. I think that she is the best partner for me. She's, you know, my puzzle piece. She inspires me to be better. And there's like a level of comfort that I have in our relationship that, you know, I just haven't found with anybody else, you know? And she's very ambitious, smarter than me. I mean, shit, she's a quality engineer at a fiber optics manufacturing plant. Like that is,
I just went blank. I don't even know.
I know. Every time she talks about her job, I'm just like, I am the dumb one in this. but no, she's great. I don't think kids are in her future. But you know, I think that Tori and I have a really beautiful plan for what we want to do.
Amazing. I wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to see how life turns out for you, and I will be watching your journey. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.